Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I can stand here tonight and say without question that the state of our Commonwealth is strong.
Well, that's Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker last night delivering his fourth State of the Commonwealth address, this one at the start of the hugely popular governor's re-election bid. And he's popular for a reason, because indeed, by many measures, the state of the Commonwealth is strong.
Bloomberg ranked Massachusetts number one in innovation for the past 2 years. The United Health Foundation called Massachusetts the healthiest state in the nation. In a 2014 national survey, Thumbtack gave Massachusetts a D+ for small business friendliness. Last year, they gave us an A-. U.S. News and World Report ranked Massachusetts the best state in the nation in which to live, work, and raise a family. And for the third time in 4 years, the New England Patriots are going to the Super Bowl.
Massachusetts, however, is a complicated place, a state of extremes. The governor acknowledged that as well last night. Here's what he said about the state's housing crunch.
Young people, seniors, young, working, and middle-class families can't afford to rent or buy a home here in the Commonwealth.
So yes, the state of the Commonwealth is strong. But I would add, it also depends on who you are. Joining me now in the studio to dig into the work ahead is Michael Curry. He's former president of the Boston NAACP and a member of the National NAACP Board of Directors. Michael Curry, it's great to have you back.
Great to be here.
Also with us is Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute. Jim, good to see you again as well.
Good to be with you.
Okay, so let me just get first your brief takes. I mean, I know his speech was last night, and we will look ahead here in a second. But overall, I mean, do you think the governor made a fair assessment of his own work over the past year? Michael, let me start with you.
Yeah, I think, you know, and we have had this conversation when mayors do this or governors do this, is that they lay out their record and they do it in the best possible light that they can for themselves. And I think it's up for the folks like the advocates and candidates that are running against them to point out the discrepancies. However, I think that the governor has a compelling story to tell. I think whether you're looking at innovation and employment and health care and his challenges to his party down in D.C., he's done some things that were noteworthy, and he included that in the speech. Mm.
Jim, your thoughts?
I would agree. I mean, I think he first showed that he likes the news. He just started naming news organizations that rate Massachusetts highly. So that's pretty different from the president, right? He says, I'm not him. I'd say he took a lot of credit for things, including the Patriots. That's cool.
Slip that in.
It was a super granular speech. I mean, is this...
But that's classic Baker, though, isn't it?
It's classic Baker, but to the point of actually talking about tree plantings. That's a level of granularity we don't often see, right? But I guess your question is, was it a fair assessment? I think it was a fair assessment, but it's a very granular one that doesn't have an overarching theme unless you pull from it. Look, I want to govern to make sure people have jobs, the economy is growing, and I don't want nonsense. He didn't even articulate that one, though. I mean, it wasn't stated clearly, look, jobs are a big deal, biggest deal for me because it gives people dignity, allows them to rise socially. But he pointed instead at 10 different things that he did.
Now, look, full disclosure, I like bold vision. I do. But on the other hand, I feel like, you know, what we heard was vintage Baker, yep. Right? I mean, he is granular, and he one of his strengths is he zeroes in on stuff that can be fixed, and he identifies it and articulates it and then sets out some goals and tries to fix it. Yeah. And that's what we heard last night. Yeah. And I think, you know, he knows his audience well. The trees thing?
And the bike routes, the bike paths.
But that stuff really matters to folks in Massachusetts. So, I mean, I'll give him credit for that. But Michael, to Jim's point, this is something I asked two people yesterday as well on the show. I just want to get your thoughts on this. I mean, Governor Baker is the most popular governor in the country. He's probably the most popular Republican in the country right now. The state of the Commonwealth overall is pretty strong if you look at averages. I mean, to Jim's point, I feel like if there's anyone who has a platform for boldness and could get away with it, it's Charlie Baker. And yet, you know, we don't see that. Is that a problem? Is he missing an opportunity?
Yeah, I think, you know, many, and again, as we'll see play out over the next few months, as his challengers go at him on whether he was bold enough, I think you can always ask for a bolder vision, especially when, as we'll talk about in a minute, when there's continued inequities across the board. And for those who are still challenged to get a job or to live in safe communities or to get a fair and competitive education, yes, you need a bolder vision. So I'd say, one, as a person of color, as an advocate, yes, we need a bolder vision. But I think he's doing the political thing. The safe thing is when you've been successful, when you're the opioid governor, when you've been probably, and I often like to reference, and this is going to age me, the Fred Flintstone episode where Fred Flintstone was cloned, the Yabba Dabba Doo episode. If we could have many more Charlie Bakers down in D.C. that are Republicans, we'd be in a much better place, quite frankly, than where we are right now. So I think he can ride that. The fact that he is a moderate Republican and a person who's willing to work across the aisles and someone who has some accomplishments in almost every sector to speak to.
Yeah. So I can't get away from the fact that maybe just sort of we here in the chattering classes might be the only ones who want vision, because on WBR's Facebook page last night, Sean Lovell wrote that he thinks, quote, "It's great to have a governor in Massachusetts who is not ostentatious, knows how to get things done, and is driven by data, not by fake news, scandals, or the size of his hands." But let's talk a little bit about some of the specific granular things that Governor Baker did say last night. First of all, let's tackle K-12 education, because he talked about ed funding.
We have the highest four-year graduation rate and the lowest dropout rate we've ever had. To continue that momentum, we're funding K-12 education at the highest level in history, more than $4.7 billion, and tomorrow's budget submission will boost that number by another $100 million, representing an increase of nearly $500 million since we took office.
So, Jim, your thoughts on that? Because this is one point in which I think Governor Baker does receive some pushback from particularly impassioned Democrats over education funding.
So, look, I would completely agree with what Mike said a second ago, which is on some of the bigger issues, you do have to have vision to push them. If you're talking about a finite issue like Bridgewater State Hospital, a problem that plagued the state for over 50 years, the subject of a well-known documentary as to how bad it was, the governor deserves huge credit for fixing something that was stuck there for 50 years. And you see that over and over again on small things that are finite things. I don't mean small. Bridgewater State Hospital's reform is not small.
Right.
It matters. But in the area of education, what is, I guess, interesting to me to some degree, and this is where I do think vision matters, think of Governor Baker's mentor, political mentor, Bill Weld. Third year of his first administration. What is he talking about at the State of the Commonwealth? It's the Education Reform Act, which changed our world, put in place high-quality standards, some additional funding, charter schools, school-based management, all kinds of reforms that led the state for many years to be the fastest improving state in the country. We have, for the last 8 years, stagnated in terms of our scores compared to our peers, and we've actually declined on national assessments over the last 3 years.
That is not the message the governor was giving last
night. No, I understand. Look, and he is providing more funding, and he's doing some cool things that are small bore that are dealing with issues that real people deal with. However, the larger issue of how we increase performance, and this is where I would push back against my Democratic friends, it's not just a matter of funding. The city of Boston has over $20,000 per student. We got to think big about bigger reforms in order to make sure we continue to progress. Because they're no longer number one in every subject tested in the national assessment like we had been for a long time.
Okay, so Michael Curry, to that point, one of the first pieces of criticism, actually, I saw of the governor last night on this issue of K-12 funding came from Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz, who right now, I mean, you talked about the 93 ed reform law, Jim. Right now, Senator Chang-Diaz is trying to get the foundation budget formula, the very formula by which we come up with these numbers on how much to fund schools. She's trying to get that updated to meet 21st century standards.
Yeah.
I mean, that's actually a place where granular meets vision.
Right, absolutely.
He could have made a comment on that, but he didn't. And Sonia Chang-Diaz, her argument is that the governor is sort of looking at the numbers differently than she is. She sees that when you take into account inflation, you get level funding over the past several years.
But yeah, you know, I've had the fortune of working closely with Senator Diaz and her staff often, and on this education issue being one, I do trust her judgment. I think the reality is the foundation budget is a challenge. And if we want to push this governor to be aspirational and swing for the fence, that we need to figure out how to get more funding into communities. I think you can go across the state and talk to mayors who will tell you that they need more funding to, and I do disagree with you. I think part of it is funding. I think it's also about policy, that making sure that we invest in education as a critical part for everything else, the economy, you know, employment, that the reality is our kids are not getting the resources that they need to be competitive, not only across the state, but with other states as well. I did call over to Roxbury Community College, and I served on the board, and I talked to President Roberson, who told me one thing she was very proud of was that the governor had included in his budget some additional financial aid for full and part-time students, right, which is definitely the money that she thought was critical, and was crediting him for including that in his budget. So there's a good story to tell. But again, as an African-American, as a person who grew up in poorer communities, as a person who often went to schools that were not competitive, I would want this governor to be more aspirational.
So can I just so Jim, back to you on education. I mean, we got to get to some other issues, but this is such an important one. Yeah. I mean, I think maybe people listening might have presumed that you'd be more aligned with the governor on this. But I mean, so what would you have liked to have heard him say last night?
Look, the state maintained control of its standards. What it did after that is it revised its standards, as it has to do every 3 to 7 years. The science standards were revised downward in terms of their aspirations. The math standards were about the same, maybe a little worse, and the English language arts ones were, again, not as good as they were before. I would like to see those standards increased. I simply believe that kids who are exposed to great literature, who are exposed to mathematics of, let's say, Algebra 1, the 8th grade, on a consistent basis and making sure the curriculum gets there, that's the lifeblood. I mean, the content is the lifeblood of education. I'd like to hear more about that. Funding is important, but let's not mistake funding with the right reforms and the right steps is the thing we need. But funding alone ain't going to do it.
All right. So let's talk about another major issue in Massachusetts that's both a driver and a result of some serious inequality here, housing. And the governor mentioned last night that while the state has made strides on the housing front, much more needs to be done, and that he wants Massachusetts to build 135,000 new units by 2025.
It's been decades since this state produced enough housing to keep up with demand, and the result has been predictable. A limited supply creates overheated demand and rising prices. Young people, seniors, young, working, and middle-class families can't afford to rent or buy a home here in the Commonwealth. We filed legislation in 2017 that will make it possible to build more housing.
Okay, Michael, I have to say, I found it rather arresting to hear the governor actually just say out loud, people can't even afford to live here.
Absolutely.
So that's a, you know, that's a important sort of public acknowledgement of one of the major things we wrestle with. But did you hear the governor take steps forward in terms of how to chip away at that problem?
No, I think, you know, again, we talk about vision. I think part of what I'll be looking for, not as an advocate when I open up and start to look at his budget, is what he's proposing to do in that, in the details, because the devil's in the details. As they say, and I think the reality is, and I just had a meeting with Boston Housing Authority today where they were sharing sort of their vision for how to deal with some of these issues. It is disturbing that generations of folks who've lived here can't afford to live here. And then I have friends who want to move here for employment but say, I can't afford to live in Massachusetts and will not take a job here. That is a challenge. And I would argue one of the biggest challenges before this governor and one of the biggest challenges before the mayors of our major cities, that if we cannot fix that problem with housing, we're losing talent. And I know that's been a conversation. I think the Boston Foundation's report that they did on this, we have to address that challenge, and we need to do it with all deliberate speed.
Jim?
This is one where, again, like education, you need not just have vision but stick-to-itiveness with the legislature, with mayors, and pull people together and try to force the issue. Opening 40A, which is the chapter that defines our zoning laws, is the crucial part of this. And no one wants to open it because they're worried that once you open it, even worse things will be put into it, more blockage for housing development. This is one where one of the crucial issues is school costs, because most mayors don't want to build more houses because it could have the evil little children who have to go to school that you have to fund. So it is a huge issue which has a funding component to it. It has a zoning sort of NIMBY component to it. And it has
the
a huge economic development.
The might take a look at zoning, though. I mean,
right.
Look, the previous governor made a real run at this with the economic development chief who put a ton into this for about 6 years, had a working group on it, and they got pretty much nowhere. 40R and 40S were reforms that were put in place that would target development in specific areas with some state funding. It built an anemic number of units. We have to have a real big conversation about how we share some level of prosperity associated with economic growth that the state gets from tax revenues, and we have to find a way to make sure that we can do it around transportation nodes. So this is really an MBTA slash housing yeah. issue. So yeah. it's a little bit like trying to fix two big problems by putting two big problems together.
Yeah. And that just makes
that's tough.
one enormous problem.
Right, right.
Okay, we just got a minute to go here with the two of you. And I want to circle back to this vision thing. Because, you know, at the end of the governor's speech, he did say that, you know, he doesn't feel like he's being too simplistic to say that we're all here to help people. And he ended sort of this section by saying, we also want people to believe in their government. Now, maybe he was soft-spoken when he said that. Maybe he didn't use soaring language, whatever. But I feel like this is a vitally important thing. And why does that not account for some kind of vision, that the state of American politics is such that it is somewhat visionary to say, we're going to provide governance you can believe in, Michael?
Right. We are all traumatized by what we see play out every day. You know, I have so many friends who don't even want to turn on the television because they might see a Trump interview. Or see some new policy that is disturbing. We are fortunate, and I think as we see him compete to keep that job, fortunate to have a governor who cares. I think one of the things that he has going for him is he's a sincere guy. And I remember him even back in his Harvard Pilgrim days when he worked in the administration. He comes across as very sincere, sympathetic. People want to know that there's somebody who cares in those jobs and that somebody who's going to deliver and try their best to deliver on policies and programs that will make a difference in their lives. It doesn't always play out that way, no matter how good they are
yeah.
or how nice they are. But the reality is I think there's something about Massachusetts that we should be very fortunate that we live here and not in some of the other states that I get to visit as a part of my NAACP role.
Yeah. Jim, just a couple seconds.
Yeah, sure. One of the things that's actually remarkable about the room last night is everyone in that room, I should say everyone, just about everyone in that room really likes Charlie Baker because the way he works with them, that is he gives them credit, he works with them, that's not the case with a lot of our previous governors, by mm-hmm. the way. Just run through the list and understand how much tension there was. But sometimes tension is a good thing if you want to push some issues. What I would say is Charlie has a view that's a little bit like, if I govern this way, we inspire other people to govern this way. And this project of government is a long-term thing. It's not like I'm going to fix it. A lot of governors come in and say, I'm going to fix everything. I'm transformational. That's not who he is. That's a good thing. By the same token, as I was saying before, sometimes tension is a good thing if you want to push some pretty big issues. And we have a couple of big structural issues. You named them.
Yeah.
Education, housing slash transportation.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute. It's always great to have you, Jim. Thank you. And Michael Curry, former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP and member of the NAACP's National Board. Thank you as
Thank
well.
Thank you.
And you get to hurry out for your plane.
To the airport.
Well, as Michael did mention, this year is an election year, and Charlie Baker is running for re-election. And to talk about that, we are joined now by WBUR's senior political reporter, Anthony Brooks. Hello, Anthony.
Hey, Magna.
By the way, great coverage last night of the speech.
Appreciate that.
But as you heard both Michael and Jim say, maybe they wanted to see more vision in Charlie Baker's speech. But what was your takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting to listen to Jim and Michael. I agree with a lot. I mean, in my notes in front of me, I had written vintage Baker, you know, attention to granular detail. These are all things that they said. But what struck me is that while it lacked that big, bold vision thing, it was still a speech about the power of government and how efficient, well-run government can be a source for good. And that's striking because it makes Charlie Baker a somewhat unusual Republican, especially when you consider what's going on in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he handled that issue sort of in a Charlie Baker way. There were no calls for big expensive programs, no push for more taxes, no sort of big vision thing, as you guys were saying. But he did talk about a bunch of modest things, you know, doubling the earned income tax credit for working families, modest investments to help communities confront global warming, investments in housing, and continued efforts to take on the opioid addiction crisis. And while he didn't specifically name Donald Trump in that toxic political environment in Washington, he did make that appeal that you were just referencing, which I found quite powerful. Like, people should believe in government. And it said something about our times that is actually, as you suggested, Magna, kind of a bold thing to say these days, because it's not something you can take for granted. So I think that's what he's going to be bringing. This is, as you said, the election year kicks off. This is what he's going to be bringing to voters, that style of a politically moderate guy, an expert of sorts in the nuts and bolts of government, maybe not a believer in small government, but certainly not extravagant government. And, you know, that's the case he's going to be making.
All right. So let's talk about the fact that this is an election year or a re-election bid on Baker's part, because there are three Democrats running against the governor, Jay Gonzalez, Seti Warren, and Bob Massey. I mean, what are they saying?
Yeah. So we heard from them last night as part of our coverage. And I was trying to think sort of how to sum up what they said. And I think it comes down to three themes. One is what you were talking about with Jim and Michael, no big vision thing. The other is a refusal to raise taxes to do those big things. And the third thing is this effort to tie Baker to Donald Trump, who remains very unpopular in the state. So we can listen to a little bit of what these guys said. So here's Jay Gonzalez. He's the former Secretary of Administration and Finance under Deval Patrick. And he faults Baker on a number of issues, including the budget, the addiction crisis, which he says he hasn't done enough on, transportation and the T, which he says is far from fixed and fixed and remains a huge source of frustration for the many people who depend on it. But Gonzalez's big point is this lack of vision thing. Here's what he said.
It's easy to be popular when you don't do anything and you never take a stand and your whole approach to the job is being cautious instead of courageous. And we're 3 years into his term and he's got no record of any meaningful accomplishment on any issue that makes a difference to people on a day-to-day basis and no agenda for actually doing so.
Okay, point taken. But in fairness, I mean, the governor did point out a bunch of accomplishments last night, which we talked about, including bringing that structural deficit from $1 billion down to less than $100 million. Health Connector, Bridgewater State, just to name a few.
Yep, lots of things, and they're all true. The Democrats are going to argue, though, that while Baker sees the glass half full, they see it as half empty and point out that while times are good for many in this state, we have some of the highest rates of income inequality in the nation, wealth inequality along racial lines, and too many people are still struggling to pay the rent, to pay for college, they will argue. And they criticize Baker for that lack of the big, bold initiative to address those things. And I think your previous guests were sort of speaking to this issue. So here's former Newton Mayor Seti Warren, who says that the big issue is Baker's refusal to raise revenue, either through taxes or support of the Fair Share Amendment, the so-called millionaire's tax, to make what he calls critical investments. Here's Seti Warren.
Governor Baker continues to say no new revenue. And here we have critical issue of education. We have students taking on huge student debt at the state and community college system. We need additional resources. Massachusetts has the worst commuter rail system in the country. We haven't made investments in the infrastructure. It's clear.
Now, in fairness, since that disastrous winter of 2015, the Baker administration has made investments in the $100 million in upgrades and maintenance to the MBTA. But Warren and other Democrats say it's too little.
Okay. So, Anthony, you also mentioned efforts to tie Baker to President Trump, who's extremely unpopular in Massachusetts.
Yes, to say the least. And this could be tricky for Baker. I mean, he's hugely popular now. But you and I have talked about this, right? When the election rolls around, Elizabeth Warren is on the ballot. Lots of people in this state in particular are energized against Trump. It could be tricky for Baker. So he's distanced himself from the president's policies, including efforts to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, the travel ban, and what he's done on DACA. But he's done it quietly because he needs the votes of those 1 million folks who voted for Trump. And even last night when he called for a kind of civility in government, Trump was invisible. He was the unnamed specter. He was he who shall not be named. So the Democrats would like to exploit that. So here's Democrat Bob Massey, the environmentalist, author, and entrepreneur, going after Baker on this particular issue.
We have a president attacking our fundamental structures of democracy, and Charlie Baker, if you look at his record, has coddled him or refused to stand up to him. He didn't go to either women's march. He didn't go out to the airport. He didn't go to the science march. He didn't go to the climate march. He doesn't speak up.
Now, it's not clear to me if this line of attack is going to work, because I think people can make the distinction that Trump is unpopular. Baker is a different kind of guy than Trump. But it is clear that Baker is trying to preempt it, as he did last night, calling for, you know, as you mentioned, giving people a reason to have faith in government without the noise, name calling and finger pointing.
Yeah. So while these Democratic candidates for governor, you know, they're running for governor, so they're going to be critical of the sitting governor. But on the other hand, it seems as if so many Democrats on Beacon Hill last night gave the governor glowing reviews. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's striking. And I think Jim Sturgis put his finger on that. I think Baker gives these guys a lot of credit. They like working with him. But it did feel like a love fest last night, with lots of Democratic lawmakers really heaping praise on the Republican governor. So we spoke to Jeff Sanchez, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. So here's a leading Democrat who called Baker's speech both inspirational and aspirational.
Frankly, a number of the things that he mentioned, they are successes that we've had. When I first came into office a number of years ago, the T was overburdened by its debt. There wasn't much going towards the capital infrastructure. And now a lot of that's changed with all the work that we've all done together.
Just Mr. Sanchez, the T still is overburdened by its debt. Just to fact check on that.
A good point. But you hear where he's coming from. But I tell you what was striking about the interview with Sanchez is that it came right after we spoke to Bob Massey, Seti Warren, and Jay Gonzalez, all of whom were making cases against the governor. Representative Sanchez didn't say word one about them. I mean, these are the guys from his party running for governor. And he didn't have anything to say good about them. He did make it clear that Charlie Baker is doing a great job. So it just gives you an indication of how much support Charlie Baker has.
How high up does this go, though, this love fest?
All right. Well, so when House Speaker Bob DeLeo was asked if Baker is unbeatable, he said, "I don't feel anyone is unbeatable except maybe Tom Brady and the Patriots."
Okay. WBR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks, thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.